I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Roy Moore did not concede on Tuesday night, saying it was in God's hands when it was announced that Doug Jones would be Alabama's new senator, and he hasn't conceded yet. It's been a quarter of a century since a Democrat represented the state in the U.S. Senate. Meanwhile, in Washington, the tax plan is making its way through Congress with a vote planned for next week. While Republicans are pumped about changes to the tax system, the public is not enthused, according to the polls. The Me Too campaign is having an impact on Congress with the resignations of Senator Al Franken and Congressman John Conyers. And just yesterday, Congressman Blake Farenthold said he would not seek re-election. Four women who accused President Trump of sexual harassment had a press conference this week. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said those women should be heard, and Senator Kristen Gillibrand said the president should resign. He called her a lightweight and tweeted she'd do anything for a campaign contribution. White House Press Secretary Huckabee Sanders said, "Your mind is in the gutter if you thought the president's tweet was sexist." Well, this passes for our politics today, which is what we are going to talk about with our three guests. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Shawna Shamus. She's Assistant Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University at Camden. She's got a new book called Out of the Running, Why Millennials Reject Political Careers and Why It Matters. Shawna, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Anthea Butler, and she's Associate Professor of Religious Studies and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, serves as the chair of the Council of Graduate Studies in Religion, and she's got a forthcoming book, From Palin to Trump, Evangelicals, Race, and Religion. Anthea Butler, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And joining us by telephone is Christopher Nicholas. He's a Republican political consultant, president of Eagle Consulting Group, which is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Christopher Nicholas, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi there. I feel like a schlep. I don't have a book coming out.
I know, and you're by phone, and I will not forget you. I will make sure as the conversation goes on that you will be part of it, Chris. Let me play a clip, and this is Alabama Representative Terry Sewell. She was speaking on Wednesday about the Doug Jones victory.
I think the real story of this election was the tremendous African-American woman vote, 98%. And when you think about the fact that women overall, the female vote, went to Jones by 51%, it's quite amazing when you think about how much Trump got in. And for us, 7 months or 8 months later, to be able to come up with that kind of coalition, that kind of winning coalition, I do believe it's a formula for the future.
Anthea, does the Democratic Party owe black women?
Absolutely. They owe them everything and then some. I think that basically, you know, the playbook that Hillary Clinton played in 2016 was criticized. But the one thing she did right was to go to every black church and talk to lots of African-American women. And African-American came out and showed out in this election cycle. And I think that basically it's not just a thing of lip service now. What Democratic candidates need to do is to think about the ways in which they need to think about policies that are going to help African-American women, not just expect us to show up at the polls and vote.
Let me give you a chance to weigh in on this as well. Shawna, how did you see what happened in Alabama on Tuesday?
So there's a couple of big stories there, and the black women's story, I think, is the most critical. It's absolutely where we should start. There's also a youth story, because millennials, if only millennials had voted, we would if only non-millennials had voted, we'd have Senator Moore right now. There's kind of an education story, but again, if only white men, even if they had a college degree, had voted, we'd have a Senator Moore. And there's an evangelical and abortion story that maybe we'll get to. But so there's several stories going on. I think race is the most critical, and race plus gender is where to start. But there's lots there.
Which we will get to. Chris, let me give you a chance to weigh in on as well. How did you see what happened on Tuesday in Alabama?
Well, you know, there are some in my party that may disagree, but it was very good news for the GOP nationally that Mr. Moore stayed Mr. Moore rather than becoming Senator Moore. He's done a lot of damage to the party already, and if he was actually in office, would have been a lot more problematic for the party across all 50 states. So I congratulate the Jones campaign. They took advantage of the environment they were in. They got their base there. And you saw all across the state Democratic turnout much higher percentage of the presidential turnout than the Republican turnout was. So in addition to the victory for black women in this, I think another part of that, the other side of that coin, are all the Republicans who stayed home.
Hmm.
It was a special election, so there was nothing else going on. And I think the other person who deserves credit is the senior senator, the Republican from Alabama, Senator Shelby, who was not a media hound, who went on the Sunday shows on Sunday and basically gave Republicans the okay to either stay home or do as he did, which is vote for a write-in.
And I think there were something like 20 or 21,000 write-ins, which is probably a lot when you look at that election. Let me quote something that Brian Stevenson said. He's the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative. It's based in Montgomery, Alabama. He said, "There is no state in America where black people recognize the horrors of turning back the clock more than the state of Alabama. There's a consciousness about this history in the African-American community. You can't go 2 miles without some Confederate emblem or icon or flag taunting you." I'm back to you, Anthea Butler. And those are powerful words. You know, I don't live in Alabama. I'm not African American, but those are very, very powerful words. It really struck me.
Yeah, no, there's a memory here, and that memory is ingrained deep within the soil of Alabama. I mean, basically, there was a map that came out this week that showed the places where all the most slaves were, basically, and that correlated to the amount of votes, black votes that happened that dug over the top, basically. And I think that's really important to remember is that this cycle of racism that has been happening, especially in this election, if we want to go back, and I'd love to hear Chris talk about this, is that, you know, you have candidates. Roy Moore is like a Tea Party candidate, essentially. He was that guy. He basically said, "I don't want any amendments past the 10th Amendment." So he likes slavery to still be in. And when you hear someone speak like that, you are coming out to the polls because there's no way we're going back there. We are not turning around. We're not going back. And so I think that's really the message of this election cycle, is that if Republicans think they can continue to run on racist platforms like that, then they should expect to be pushed back.
Well, Moore has been described in many ways. I heard from a lot of Republicans, a bad candidate, an extreme candidate, even a dangerous candidate. And Sean, when you look at his background, his baggage, if I can put it that way, it's interesting that it was as close as it was, about 21,000 votes.
It is not surprising to me. I think a lot of political scientists would have expected Moore to win, given the way Alabama has voted in the past, given the kind of politics of the state. It is actually surprising that Jones eked out this victory.
Because it's such a red state.
It is such a red state, but elections are all about turnout. Right. And the high voter turnout, I wanted to go back to what Anthea was saying, particularly because in the wake of Charlottesville, I think black voters are awake. I think it is Black Pack did this poll recently that said that a large number of black voters feel that their communities are under attack. And black communities have always been under attack in this country. But I think Charlottesville brought it out. And that Charlottesville, in the wake of Trump's election and then Trump's complete mishandling of it, was such a disaster for the Republican Party, I think, because if black voters voted at very high rates, we'd see a lot of difference in especially these red states.
Chris, does it tell us that the president has either no coattails or tiny coattails?
Well, I think it tells us that he never wants to hear the word Alabama again. I mean, it's just been a cascade of problems for him ever since he appointed, Senator Sessions to be Attorney General. And I just want to make a point here that a lot of people in the Republican Party acknowledge that Moore was a loon long before these terrible charges against him of, you know, abusing children came out. So he was a guy who had underperformed at the polls when he ran for election. They elect their Supreme Court folks down there like we do here.
Right.
And his last election, he won with about 52% of the vote, which in Alabama is probably 13 or 14 points below where someone should have been. So he didn't start off from a strong place. And let's face it, I think a lot of Democrats want to try and play this up as portending a lot for 2018, and I would tamper that down a little bit because I don't think we're going to have, let's hope not, any other Republican candidates that have his track record on not wanting any amendments after the 10th and obviously being, you know, credibly accused of what he was accused of. So hopefully if there are any Republican candidates out there like that, let me give you a pro tip. Go away.
Go away. You're having a reaction there,
well,
Shauna.
Chris, I am with you 100% on the loon factor here, but really it's a problem with institutionally with how we set up primaries, I think, that somebody with minority support, like our current president, somebody, people who are complete loons and Moore was not unelectable, but should not be elected, can win the primary. It suggests a lack of party control to me.
Well, let me pick up on something, and I'll go back to you, Anthea, which is about, and then we will move on from Alabama, but there were something like 500,000 doors that were knocked on. I mean,
yes.
This was a real sort of a, you know, what do they call it, shoe leather kind of campaign.
Grassroots organizing. Grassroots organizing. I mean, I think this is the thing. I mean, what we have to sort of realize and think about is that despite all the technological advances and everything else, well, not everybody is on Twitter and Facebook, okay? And they watch the evening news, and if your evening news is being taken over by Sterling Communications, you're only going to hear one side of the story, right? So knocking on those doors, reminding people who Roy Moore really is, they knew, but they needed to be reminded, that is the way that we're going to win elections. And I want to just say something to Chris. It's that basically, no, we can't get excited because you all have gerrymandered everything, okay? So we understand what gerrymandering is, and we understand how Republicans have rigged the system so that they can win. But despite that, I do think that there's two things that need to happen in 2018. One is that the Democrats need to get out there and do that same kind of shoe leather campaign. And the second thing is if Republicans want to win, you've been running some loons since 2010. Let's go back to Sharon Angle and everybody else. If you get some moderate Republicans and start to turn back the tide, perhaps we could have a conversation. But unfortunately, Republicans haven't governed since Obama's been in office.
Very quick response, if you could, Chris. I know you worked with Arlen Specter. Do we need more, when he was a Republican, I should add, do we need more Arlen Specters?
We need more candidates that accurately represent their little slice of America. And I just want to say to the professor that we always appreciate input on how to run the Republican Party from people who can't.
I just wish you'd take it.
I know they do.
I wish you'd just take it.
I'm trying to help, actually, Chris. I think there need to be two good parties.
Give and you give. I get it. Thank you.
No, don't leave us. Let's all stay together here. Let's take a very short break. Talking with Christopher Nicholas. He's a Republican political consultant, Anthea Butler from the University of Pennsylvania, Shauna Shamis from the Rutgers University Camden campus, talking about this week's politics. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after the short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We're talking about what the Alabama election says about the Democratic and Republican parties, their strategies ahead. We'll be talking about the impact of the Me Too campaign or movement on politics. And if we have time, we'll talk a bit about the tax bill that's making its way through Congress as well. Let me play another clip. And this was earlier this week. In fact, I think it was on Tuesday. CNN's Jay Tapper asked Roy Moore's spokesman, a man named Ted Crockett, why Judge Moore believes that Muslims should not be allowed to serve in Congress. Let's listen.
You have to swear on a Bible to be an elected official in the United States of America. He alleges that a Muslim cannot do that ethically, swearing on the Bible.
You don't actually have to swear on a Christian Bible. You can swear on anything, really. I don't know if you knew that. You can swear on a Jewish Bible.
Oh, no, I swore on the Bible. I've done it three times.
I'm sure
Jay.
You have. I'm sure you've picked a Bible, but the law is not that you have to swear on a Christian Bible. That is not the law. You don't know that? All right, Ted Crockett.
I don't know. I know that Donald Trump did it when we made him president.
Because he's Christian and he picked it. That's what he wanted to. That's what he wanted to swear in on. Ted Crockett with the Moore campaign. Good luck tonight. Thank you so much for being here. My panel will react when
Merry
we get
Christmas,
back.
Merry Christmas, Jay.
Thank you, sir.
That was Jay Tapper really schooling Ted Crockett on the Constitution. And I play that, Chris, just because, not to call out Ted Crockett in particular, although I think he was worth being called out on that because he was so wrong. But it does raise questions about just how much do people know about the Constitution, about politics, and whether even the world we live in is this long education process on things like the Emoluments Clause and all the other parts of our political system. I'd just be curious about your thoughts.
As I said earlier, I'm sorry for stepping on the soundbite. You know, loons attract loons. I think there was also a woman who was his press spokesperson who had a couple very interesting, moments on national TV. It's just, you know, it's hard to explain the unexplainable.
Do you think, though, hold on one second, but where do you think Chris leaves the president? He did support Roy Moore, then he basically sort of half withdrew his support, saying that he knew that he couldn't win in the general election. Where do you think this leaves the president?
Well, I think it was an unforced error. To me, it also reiterates the fact that I just don't like the Southern system where you have a primary and then a runoff and then something else. I mean, this was a slow-motion train wreck. You know, in Pennsylvania, people might not like it, but when there's an opening like that, the parties meet in a convention and choose the nominees, and then you just have one election. So I think there were some missteps by folks. All the reporting is that his professional advisor said stay away from this, and he wanted to play.
Yeah.
So sometimes in campaigns you win, and sometimes you lose. When you lose, you kind of get showed up. And this president is all about appearing to be strong and strength. And that's what undercut him so much, is it shows the opposite.
Anthea, I read this, something like 80% of white Christians who identified as evangelicals voted for Moore. You have a forthcoming book about evangelicals, and I want to quote something from Christianity Today. Mm-hmm. This is the first paragraph. No matter the outcome of today's special election in Alabama, obviously written on Tuesday for a coveted U.S. Senate seat, there's already one loser, Christian faith. When it comes to either matters of life and death or personal commitments of the human heart, no one will believe a word we say, perhaps for a generation. Christianity's integrity is severely tarnished. Do you agree?
Let me rephrase that.
Go ahead.
Needs to replace Christianity with evangelical, because that's the real issue here. And it's not about Christianity. Christianity's fine. There's plenty of Catholic Christians and Pentecostals and others who don't do the kind of things that Roy Moore and his followers do. Okay, and I say followers for a specific reason. Evangelicalism is in trouble. And evangelicals, specifically white evangelicals who continue to vote in this pattern where they vote over their Christianity and they vote for the Republican Party. So, you know, I'm sorry, but the Republican Party is bigger than Jesus for them. That is the problem. It's not Christianity, and I think it is disingenuous. And I know what the Christianity Today editor was trying to do.
Right.
I think he just missed a big one on this one. I think it is the wrong way to talk about this. It's evangelicals, and they know that evangelicalism has a problem.
Where do you think, Shauna, the Democratic Party goes from here?
So going to what Chris and Anthea have said, though, just now, I just wanted to say I think it's too easy, Chris, to dismiss Crockett. He clearly is loony, but to dismiss everybody like him as loons is missing this larger picture here, because, and I think the evangelical strength in politics is part of it, but what we're seeing is this moment of kind of deep anger and anti-intellectualism, anti-elitism, right? And a smart politician can use these people's votes and try to harness their anger, and Trump did this really well. Brexit did this really well, to harness the anger of people about elites. But then you end up with spokespeople who really don't know anything about what they're talking about. And then when they get into office, do not know how to govern. So where does the Democratic Party go? If they're smart, like Anthea says, they're going to, and like Terry Sewell said in that clip earlier, they're going to take that formula for the future of the people who have been ignored or who have not been turning out.
What about the Republican Party? Chris, where do you think it needs to go from here?
Is that to me, Marty?
Yes, it is.
Well, as I said before, we need to nominate people who are, you know, better represent their slice of the world. I think we have to find people who have a larger agenda than just wanting to support the current occupant of the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. What both parties have are their bases have moved to the right for the GOP, to the left for the Democrats. So primaries now, instead of culling the herd and giving you the strongest candidate, often instead finds the candidates who are least able to win because they are so far to one side or the other. So I think the movement here has to be to the center, however that is defined, because the center in Alabama is different than the center here, different than the center in Kansas. So that's what I think we need to look for.
Anthony, you want to add something? Yeah,
yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to ask Chris. One of the things that was very interesting to me throughout this campaign was the fact that Steve Bannon stepped in and said some really harsh things, especially about somebody who is a big moderate, Mitt Romney. And if you're talking about moving to the center, and we've got people like Mitt Romney who might jump into this Utah race, might not, I'm wondering how you think about this, because I think this is part of what, you know, the problem is in the Republican Party is that you don't have a center anymore. You've got a fringe, and the fringe is running everything.
I think Mr. Bannon, speaking personally, is a stain on the GOP, which is where he happens to be alighted as of the moment. Mm-hmm. And in this business, you know, your job is to elect candidates, in my case, elect Republicans and beat Democrats. So he took that race and he made it so a Democrat could win Alabama. You don't have to say much more than that to come to a conclusion about Mr. Bannon's tactics, because if there was any place in the country where his tune would have played well, Alabama, if not at the top of that list, would be pretty darn close. Okay.
Can I offer?
Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Further suggestions for your party, Chris?
Since we're sharing today on
yes.
Radio Time, no, go ahead.
Since you seem so eager for them, the real problem to me is institutional, right? And this will happen if the Democratic Party had the same rules in the primary. It's not about the party specifically. It's that institutionally, to get the center represented, you cannot have a simplistic idea of whoever in a crowded primary field gets the most votes is going to win. That's how you get those fringe loons that you're talking about, right? Have you seen or can you imagine a Republican Party that does a better job institutionally to represent that center that you're talking about?
Oh, it's something I've fought for years, because as I tell people, the only reason you run a primary is to get ready to win the general. That was a large part of Senator Spector's political argument in the 2004 primary against then Congressman Toomey. The problem is that primary voters aren't necessarily into process stories. They want their red meat. Mm. And that's, you know, regardless of party, because that's who shows up in a primary are your most motivated folks. And for Democrats, it's the mm-hmm. folks further to the left, and for Republicans, obviously, you know, the opposite. So this issue of getting people closer to the center, I think, is something that afflicts both parties.
Well, we are talking about what turned out to be a rather tumultuous week in politics. Shauna Shames with us, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University at the Camden Campus. Anthea Butler, Associate Professor of Religious Studies and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. They're with us here in our Philadelphia studio. And joining us by phone, Christopher Nicholas. He's a Republican political consultant, president of the Eagle Consulting Group, which is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-7-9-4-9-9. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read some comments and then I'll play another clip. A tweet from Nathan: electing Roy Moore would have potentially done permanent damage to the moral authority of this country. Tweet from Bill: I'm nonpartisan and I think open primaries are the best way to nominate appropriate candidates, not extreme partisans. A comment says, one difference between Jones and Trump is that Jones won more votes than his opponent, Trump didn't. Let me play. This is a little bit of complicated, but let me just play something that Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said at a press conference on Wednesday. And this was arguing about the tax vote, saying it should be delayed until newly elected Alabama Senator Doug Jones is seated. Let's listen and then another quick explanation.
Doug Jones will be the duly elected senator from the state of Alabama. The governor didn't appoint him. He won an election. It would be wrong for Senate Republicans to jam through this tax bill without giving the newly elected senator from Alabama the opportunity to cast his vote. Now, that's exactly what Republicans argued when Scott Brown was elected in 2010.
And just to reinforce that, Mitch McConnell said that Scott Brown should be seated before they voted on the Affordable Care Act. And the president then, President Obama, agreed with that. And I wonder, Anthea, whether Democrats don't play hardball enough.
They don't play hardball enough. You said it exactly right. Democrats should be doing a full court press on this. But the problem is that, you know, I think for Democrats, honestly, I think that they think that it's still business as usual, and it's not. And they should be pushing back. I mean, we lost a Supreme Court justice because they didn't push back hard enough. OK, so let's talk about that, because that has ramifications for years. I think Democrats need to get mean, nasty, dirty. They're playing too nice. And I don't understand why they won't push back as hard as Republicans do. I think it is a complete flaw of the party that we don't have people who won't get out there and get scrappy about this stuff, because they need to seat him, and he needs to be seated now.
But why are they so nice?
Well, I think they're nice because I think they think that, you know, they think it's a different thing. If Republicans think that the system doesn't work, Democrats think that the system works. And so they're willing to play within the system to make it work. And what they don't understand is that the system is broken because it's been broken for a while, and that they need to sort of get the same kind of mindset that Republicans have had and push in the ways that they could have. I mean, I'm thinking about just the way that Trump is appointing judges right now that can't even answer questions, okay? That he's running through all these judges. Obama could have done recess appointments and he didn't do it. And so this is where I get so frustrated with Democrats, because they won't use the tools that they have at hand to push forward the kinds of things that need to be done. They won't even fight for their own.
So Democrats aren't extreme enough? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that they're not I'm not saying they're not extreme enough. I'm saying that they don't use the same kinds of avenues that Republicans have been willing to use to get what needs to get done. We've had an election. You've got a guy down there who won't even concede because he's still waiting on God. Well, the people have spoken. This is not about God. God did not vote in Alabama.
No, I would
go ahead, Chris.
One, who cares if ex-Judge Moore ever concedes? It doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't matter.
Two, the Alabama Secretary of State's office is in the middle of their normal process, which they do after every election, of affirming it and, you know, getting it correct, and that'll be apparently about December 23rd. So there's no stalling going on. He hasn't been duly recognized by the state yet, and that's just part of the normal process of cleaning up the election. So I think he'll be in there at the end of the year.
But I think what Anthea was saying, and what I was referencing, was Mitch McConnell. I mean, what, like him or not like him, he said, we're going to vote on this tax plan before Jones is seated. And even though he had wanted Scott Brown to be seated before the Affordable Care Act, I'm just sort of using that as an example of who fights for this stuff and who doesn't.
Politics ain't no beanbag, Marnie. That's an old expression.
No, I hear you. Let me get James from Malvern to join us on Radio Times. James, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I really do think the Republicans are getting off too easy, because they've been weaponizing this kind of prejudicial and you know, that kind of talk with a dog whistle for a long time now. And then Trump came along, took the dog whistle out, put a bullhorn on it, and you know, they've been propagating this moral high ground nonsense for so long. It's incredible. They've got a large part of their constituency voting against their own best interests just with the nonsense that they put out there.
Well, James, I hear you. Let me give Shauna Shamus a chance to respond to James' comment.
Yeah, I understand the frustration, and I completely understand and sympathize with the position that the Republicans are getting off too easy and that they've been kind of acting hypocritical, wanting something when it's in their interests and then denying it to the Democrats. But I just don't agree that the solution is that the Democrats need to be meaner and nastier and dirtier. Politics is so hated and universally distrusted right now that I do want to see somebody take the high ground. I think whoever was elected should have been seated, right? That we should just have norms of reciprocity and norms of respect for the institutions. And they need to be nonpartisan. I mean, that's just the basic process.
But in such a partisan time, how do you get to that nonpartisan world or position?
Well, I know Anthea says the world has changed and we need to play by the new rules. I'm afraid that the new rules are going to drag us so deep into the muck that the institutions lose democratic legitimacy among voters. I think we could all agree on things like, and we'll approach them differently, but things like the ballot is sacred to me, right? That we will approach how that works differently. But the idea that you should count every vote and that people who deserve to vote should get to vote, we can approach it that way. People who kind of cannot agree with that should be called out for their deep hypocrisy, like right now, like Chuck Schumer is doing. But I don't agree that the solution is now to deny Republicans in the way that they have previously used dirty tricks against Democrats.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. James, thanks for the call to Radio Times, and you can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about our politics, this week in politics, another busy one, even tumultuous. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Talking with Christopher Nicholas, Anthea Butler, and Shauna Shamus. And we have some more clips queued up after this very short break. We'll be talking about the Me Too campaign coming to Washington, D.C. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. A lively conversation off the air in Philadelphia as well as on the air. Again, talking with Christopher Nicholas. He's a Republican political consultant based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, president of Eagle Consulting Group, Anthea Butler, associate professor of religious studies and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania, forthcoming book From Palin to Trump, Evangelicals, Race and Religion, and Shauna Shamus, assistant professor of political science at Rutgers University at their Camden campus, and her new book is Out of the Running, Why Millennials Reject Political Careers and Why It Matters. Let me read some more comments. A comment from Andrew. This tax bill is a job-killing bill. An email from Neil. I don't understand what Democratic Party Mr. Nicholas is seeing. It's hardly left-wing to when it nominated Hillary. A tweet says, fundamentally, isn't government about representing all the people? Partisanship is a human imperfection realized. An email from Bob. Our rights are being taken away from us, except for guns, of course. I truly hope the Democrats get it together and get someone we can get behind and change all of this. Well, let me shift gears here, and I do want to talk about the Me Too campaign as it is, or movement as it is described today, whether it's in the political realm or the media realm or Hollywood. It seems like almost every day there's another name of someone else who has been accused. But I do want to focus in on Congress and also the White House. And let me play New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She's speaking at a press conference. This was back on December 6th about the problem of sexual harassment on Capitol Hill.
Enough is enough. I mean, this is a conversation we've been having for a very long time, and it's a conversation that this country needs to have. And I think when we start having to talk about the differences between sexual assault and sexual harassment and unwanted groping, you are having the wrong conversation. You need to draw a line in the sand and say none of it is okay, none of it is acceptable, and we, as elected leaders, should absolutely be held to a higher standard, not a lower standard, and we should fundamentally be valuing women.
Anthony, do you agree?
Yes. You know, it was
and
really.
She call, I should add that did yeah. she called for Senator Franken to
yes,
step down.
Yes, she called for Senator Franken to step down. And I think that, you know, I think this thing with Senator Franken where some people said he should not have stepped down, I think that's wrong. I was like, yeah, John Conyers needed to go like 50 years ago. But then again, he finally left after a little hospital stint. I think what Senator Gillibrand is saying is that if we're going to have these standards, that we need to keep them across the board. And she shot a big, you know, shot across the bow
yep.
at the President of the United States, who, you know, obviously responded in a way that basically showed what he was all about. And I think that was very clear. And I don't think, as the press secretary said, that your mind is in the gutter. I mean, you already have to be in the gutter to say something like that. So let's just put it just like it is, right? So I think that this Me Too campaign is not done in the Congress or the Senate. I think we're probably going to hear a few more things happening. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to creep closer to the Oval Office. I mean, this week, Megyn Kelly had three of Trump's accusers on. And I think if anybody wanted to get Trump, be back at Trump, it's probably Megyn Kelly. I think she's going to have more people on. So I would be very careful if I were him about saying anything about this.
Well, let me play one more clip from New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and talking with CNN's Christian Amanpour. This was on Monday, December 12th.
Well, President Trump should resign. These allegations are credible. They are numerous. I've heard these women's testimony, and many of them are heartbreaking. And President Trump should resign his position. Whether he will ever hold himself accountable is something you know, you really can't hold your breath for. And so Congress should have hearings. They should do their investigation. They should have appropriate investigations of his behavior and hold him accountable.
Let me play one more clip. This is U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley. She was speaking on Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation about the allegations of sexual misconduct and assault leveled at President Trump.
Women who accuse anyone should be heard. They should be heard and they should be dealt with. And I think we heard from them prior to the election. And I think any woman who has felt violated or felt mistreated in any way, they have every right to speak up.
Chris, I'd just be curious about, obviously, these are focused not just on Franken and on Conyers and others who have been accused, but on the president himself. What do you think the president should do?
Well, you know, I don't think he's looking for my advice, but I think everyone, you know, has a reckoning in their life if they've, you know, done these terrible things. And I think people need to come clean. You need to say what you did, and you need to be clear about it. You know, what's that old expression, karma is a you-know-what?
Oh,
so
yeah.
All these folks, whether it's in media or politics or just in regular life that doesn't get any attention, you know, you need to start acting like a human and stop being a cad. It just, you know, look, we all know this stuff has been going on. My mom told me years ago when I was growing up the harassment she got when she was out of college and my dad was away in the Navy and she was in the workforce. So, I mean, it's been around forever, but it really just needs to stop. The most pernicious thing about this, and I'm focusing specifically now on some of the women who were in media and the movies and stuff, is it doesn't just harm the person then, it blows them out of their career that they wanted to have. I mean, that's terrible, okay? And I would note for the record that this is not just only about men behaving poorly. There's a story out today about a woman in Kansas named Andrea Ramsey who was running for Congress. And she got caught up in a sexual harassment suit. She was the person doing the wrong, and she's now dropping out of that race for Congress out there. So, you know what? There needs to be a reckoning. I'm glad it's happening, and I hope it goes throughout every part of the country.
Well, Shauna,
just enough.
I appreciate you saying that. Shauna, focusing in on Congress, per se, there have been settlements and payouts. We know some of these people. We don't know others. There are confidentiality agreements. And we are also talking about taxpayer money. Do you think the public is entitled to know, assuming with the consent of the person who was given the money for the harassment, that we should know who's been paid what?
Absolutely. The biggest problem that, and this goes back to the framers trying to write the Constitution, the biggest problem that we're trying to deal with here, I think, is impunity, right? What people can get away with. And we set up the government so carefully to have all these checks and balances because we don't believe in tyranny and we don't believe in a monarchy, except that these guys often get to run their, whatever their office is. So Harvey Weinstein gets to run his office like a mob boss, like a monarch, like a dictator. The idea of people having impunity to treat their staff in a way that is just so damaging psychologically and, like Chris points out, to careers. The problem with what Chris said, and I'm with him that there needs to be a reckoning, but to have a reckoning, you have to know that you've done something wrong. And the deepest problem, and with the president right now, I think, is this is how he treats people, and he thinks of women as less than other people. Right. So he doesn't, I think, know this is normal behavior. And we are changing as a society and deciding this is not OK, that treating women this way is normal. I don't think a lot of these guys have caught up.
Interesting. Interesting. Do you think, Anthea, that people who are elected should be held to a higher standard?
I think they should be held to the standard that any other employer would hold you to. And that's basically the standard that says if you sexually harass somebody, you get turned into HR and you might lose your job. And I think it's not even about a higher standard. It's just about let's hold them to a standard. Let's hold them to the standard that you would have in any other workplace. Because if you're working in an office right now and you're listening to WHYY, you know that if you go up and you do something to your coworker that is sexually suggestive, you could be taken to HR. Congress people and senators need to know the same thing, okay? And we have lots of young people, and this is, the thing, and we can go back to, Bill Clinton on this one. We've got people who are working who are young people who are very impressionable, and if somebody comes up to you and says, I find you sexually attractive and I want to do something with you, and you do, they should be held responsible for that. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. So,
Should Farenthold have resigned?
Yeah, he should have. I mean, he should have resigned just basically for the bad pajamas he had on in that picture, but that's me. Yes, he should have resigned.
That's
a resignable offense if you're wearing pajamas that look like they should be on a 5-year-old. Yes, you should resign. But, for bad fashion choices. But, I think he should have resigned. It was, there's all of this stuff. I mean, we just had some people I'm from Texas. They just had, several people in Texas, just the attorney general just resigned, I believe it is, because of some stuff that he posted up on Facebook. This wasn't even sexual harassment, okay? So this is a moment in which people are starting to find out about what people are doing and whether they're male or female, however the harassment is going. This is probably going to come out, right? And I think it's a nerve-wracking moment, I think, for a lot of people. But I think it's a soul-searching moment for us as a nation. We have a lot of sexual repression in this country. And some of this is about repression and how people think they should behave and how they should not behave, or that the kinds of rights that they think men should have over women. And I think it's time to reevaluate that. We just can't just talk about these events without reevaluating the moral foundations that go underneath it that probably have caused a lot of this stuff to happen.
Let me get Carl from, looks like Hatfield, to join us on Radio Times. And Carl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
One of the problems in our elections are that no matter who gets into office, the party leaders grab them by the ears and tell them how they're going to vote. I mean, they're not representing the people who put them in there. They're representing their party. And then like the NRA, they'll come up to them, they'll give them $50,000, and you said, vote our way, or we're going to give this money to your opponent next year. I mean, there's so much pressure that's going on.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about party, but also and lobbyists as well, who are spending money to persuade people to their point of view. Shauna, just because you teach this political science stuff, you want to respond to Carl's comments. And then I do want to talk a little bit about the tax bill.
Sure. Carl, your comment also goes back to an earlier listener comment that I wrote down. Partisanship is a human imperfection realized, right? The idea that the real problem here is too much party loyalty. The thing in political science that we talk about in terms of parties, though, is that partisanship is in some ways damaging. I don't want everybody to think only what their party thinks, but you need parties to govern. You need coalitions. Having just a mass of individuals would be a huge mess in terms of getting legislation written. So the bigger problem, I think, Carl, is what you pointed out in terms of the what I think is criminal amounts of money floating around in politics. So I'm not against party discipline as long as the parties were responsible to the people and not to the corporations.
Just a correction. The NRA nor any other group can give a federal candidate $50,000. That's against the law.
Oh,
they
interesting.
Give a state candidate $50,000 because there are no limits on contributions on the state level, but federal level PACs can only give someone up to $10,000 per cycle.
Fair enough. I appreciate that correction. And, Carl, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Chris, let me go to you. And it looks like this tax plan is making its way through Congress. I know that Senator Rubio wanted expanded tax credits for the working poor. There are other kind of add-ons and changes that are underway probably even as we speak. Do you think it'll pass and get to the president's desk pretty much as written?
I do. You know, cutting the growth of government, cutting taxes, kind of a core tenet of the GOP, regardless of, you know, what persuasion of a Republican you are. So I think this will be passed out of the Senate. I think the president will sign it. I think it's always a good thing when the people who fund the government are allowed to keep more of their own money. So I think ultimately that'll be a good thing for A, the party, and B, the country.
And do you think those people, especially who voted for Trump, who are not wealthy, these are people with more middle-class jobs, do you think they will be pleased, Chris?
I think that ultimately this will help the economy. So I think folks, maybe not now, but as time progresses, will see it as a benefit.
How do you see it, Anthea?
I see this tax bill as probably putting us into a recession. One of the small points, I think, that has been good this week is that they stripped out the tax on graduate students. This has been something that all of us have been very concerned about. There's no way that a graduate student can pay tax on $90,000 when they're only getting $25,000 a year. It's just ridiculous. I think that this tax bill is going to enrich people that don't need to be enriched and businesses that are already not reinvesting back into their communities and not reinvesting back into salaries. One of the big things that happened with the jobs numbers this month is that basically we don't see that salaries are being matched. And if we're talking about cutting taxes, that's not going to go back into people's salaries. It doesn't make the economy work. And so you can look back at every Republican president for this. This is a problem. They always say we're going to cut taxes, we're going to do this. It ends up enriching businesses and, you know, multimillionaires, and the rest of the people end up paying for it, and we go into a recession. And so if that's where they want to go, that's fine. You know, just expect that stock market to go down.
Well, final word to you, Shauna. Sorry about that.
No problem. But with due respect to Chris, who I've really enjoyed talking to, I think the idea that this will help the economy is a pipe dream. This is a repeat of kind of an outdated and disproven theory of how you help the economy. And it's not actually going to cut government. We've just had a $700 billion military spending bill. This has some small tax breaks for middle and low income individuals that are going to expire, but the business tax cuts are going to be permanent. And this is going to add billions, if not more, to the national debt. So the idea that this is going to cut government or help the economy is so far from what the evidence is telling us that it just seems to me like that red meat he was talking about earlier for the base.
Well, we're going to let that hang out there. We do have to end our conversation. Christopher Nicholas, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And he's a Republican political consultant, president of Eagle Consulting Group in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Anthea Butler, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Radio Times as well. Associate professor of Religious Studies and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. A forthcoming book, From Palin to Trump, Evangelicals, Race, and Religion. Shauna Shamas, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks.
And she is associate professor of Religious Studies, assistant professor of Political Science at Rutgers University, their Camden campus. A brand new book called Out of the Running, Why Millennials Reject Political Careers and Why It Matters. And thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne.